Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
We're going to talk about what people are calling this myth of authority. And that their reference to the myth of authority is actually a myth itself. So, but anyway, we're going to talk about that and give people a perspective on that. We've talked a little bit about it. We've been reading from a couple of different articles that are entitled "The Myth of Authority," and you can look them up on the internet. And it's a certain idea that's kind of going around doing the tours. This is one of the things that used to be in the old days, that if somebody had an idea and they shared it with somebody, it traveled to the community by word of mouth. And occasionally people put things in print, like newsprint or whatever, and it traveled around. I mean, in the days of the American Revolution, there were several books that were just, everybody was reading them. Pamphleteers were everywhere. One of the, Common Sense was one of the ones that was traveling around. And that was Thomas Paine. And Thomas Paine, one of the things that he said is that when the American Revolution was theoretically won, he said that we shouldn't crown anybody. He actually said crown the Bible, which is kind of unusual for him to say, but why would he even say that? But if you go back and you read Thomas Paine's Common Sense, he's quoting from the Bible. He's quoting from 1 Samuel 8. And 1 Samuel 8 says that the people of Israel had been ruled by God. You know, for 400 years, the entire government was funded by free will offerings. There was no tax. There was one tiny little tax that everybody was supposed to pay once a year, and it was equivalent of about a half a dime. And it was kind of an ante up head tax, and it was just kind of to let people know that you were in the game. Now, who did you pay that tax to? Well, usually it was at Pentecost. You would gather together in these big assemblies, and people would pay in their half dime, their half shekel. And they would give that to a minister of their choice. And they would pick from all kinds of people that were considered ministers. Most of them were Levites, or what we call Levites. And by bloodline, they kind of took over this role way back in the days of the golden calf. Because they were the ones who didn't go along with the golden calf. And once you understand that the golden calf was the central bank, and that's the way they deposited their money, that all bound them together, because everything they had of value was in this golden calf. And if they were attacked and everybody fled, they had to leave behind their gold, because it was all in the golden calf. And they used something else as a medium of exchange, and that's why they needed to have Aaron build this golden calf, because he knew the arts of the temple, and the temple was a bank. And the idea was that, in Egypt, they had created little scarabs out of clay and put little markings on them that kind of gave them their denomination. And people within Egypt all traded these scarabs as if they were money. It was kind of a fiat currency. The real value that they were supposed to represent was put into a golden vault. Well, out there in the desert, you couldn't build a vault, so they put it all in a statue. Not that unique an idea. Many of the city-states had it, and we've talked about that before, they called them the reserve fund. And they had coins, but they also had the reserve fund, in the form of this statue. So everybody could see it, and everybody could make sure that nobody was dipping into the till, so to speak, because they looked there, they have four legs, horns, tail, he's all there, so nobody's robbing the bank. And that was their job to protect the bank. But amongst themselves, they didn't trade anything of value other than what they denominated as value. They usually coined these little clay scarabs or some sort of denomination. Different we have pictures of a lot of them on our website, so you can see the different kinds that they used to have. Rome had them, little tokens, and they had a value. They allowed you to, you know, go pick up. It was like an EBT card. You know, you go pick up your free bread at these little buildings on the side of the temple, and you can get free cheese sometimes, free wine. They always had these giveaways, and sometimes money. They would give out money. And if you were a member of that social welfare system, you could go and get free bread on certain days. Jews did this. They went to the Roman temples and they got free bread on those days. And if the free bread giveaway fell on one of those superstitious holidays that they used, according to Augustus Caesar, they were allowed to come on the next day and get their free bread. Christ put an end to that. He stopped that. But anyway, let's go back to Samuel 8. He stopped that for those who would follow him, or those that would accept Jesus as the Christ, as the king. There is another king, one Jesus. Thousands of Jews accepted Jesus. Anybody who tells you the Jews did not accept Jesus, so the kingdom was postponed, is a fool, a liar, an idiot, or all three of the above. Because that's just not true. You see right there in the text, thousands, one day, thousands more the next day, accepted Jesus by getting the baptism of Jesus. The ministers that Jesus appointed worked daily in the temple, rightly dividing the bread from house to house. Not free bread giveaways to people who just are too lazy to work or whatever, but those that worked, but could not get enough bread, could go to church and they would share. It says right there in people who gave an account of how the early church operated. They gathered once a week, and the leading minister of that gathering would greet everybody. They would hear the prayers of the people. In other words, hear what people needed. You know, we're not going to have enough food to get through this week, whatever it is. You know, my husband still, you know, got a broken back or whatever, or he's still missing at sea or whatever, and we're starving. And it says, those who had shared with those that didn't have enough. This is what Christians were doing. What the pagans were doing was going to the temples of Rome, funded by taxation, to get welfare, free bread, and other things. And the way they identified themselves with these little clay scarabs. You see, even the Roman silver denarii, we've all heard about that. They had the gold denarii as well, but a silver denarii was being devalued by Nero first, and then other emperors after that. Nero, of course, right at the beginning of Christianity, Nero took the gold, the silver first, some of the silver out of the silver coin. That's what they were doing in Ephesus. That's why they talk about silversmiths and stuff like that in Ephesus, because they had a way of removing some of the silver content of coins, so they were less pure, but still called them silver coins. People saw this going on. There were riots at the time of Jesus Christ because the government was pilfering the Social Security Fund that was kept in the vaults at the temple in Jerusalem. They actually had riots. Jesus even mentions those riots. Pontius Pilate put those riots down by force of arms. Why were they doing it? Because they were pilfering those funds. They were going for government projects, and that money was for their social security, their welfare. And they didn't like them pilfering it. History is repeating itself. Jesus didn't come to do away with the authority of governments. He came to teach you how to live in another kind of government. And this is what Christians were doing. He was teaching you how to live in a government like Moses had taught you. Now, the Pharisees weren't living like Moses said to live. They said they were. But Jesus says, if you knew the Father like Moses knew the Father, you would know me. But you don't know me. Christians today wouldn't know Christ if he came. Because he was teaching you how to live by faith, hope, and charity in the perfect law of liberty. Paul preached Christ first, and that's what he was teaching. That's what he was teaching the people how to do, is to live in a government like that. And that's one of the things that when we talk about these guys who write these articles about the myth of authority, they're trying to suggest that you didn't need, that any kind of government is not legitimate. It's not true. That there is no authority, that people just don't have the authority to tell you what to do and to take money from you and to tax you and all this stuff. And they tell you that, they're just going to get you into trouble. But worse than that, they're distracting you from what Christ was actually telling you. Christ came to set you free. But he knew that liberty required responsibility. One of the things that was written in one of these articles, this is a Larkin Rose article, and we can pick other ones, and I'm not picking on him, but he sets forth ideas. Some of them are correct, but enough of it is incorrect that it's going to lead you into trouble and away from what can save you. What Christ was telling you can save you. But you have to actually listen to what he says and not just listen to these ministers out there who are actually leading you down the primrose path to destruction. Contrary to the stereotype of the evil, greedy, profiteering businessman, this is what he writes, the way to become rich in a free society is by providing products and services which actually benefits the customer. Absolutely true. Almost all of the dishonest schemes that are profitable in the long term are those that are forcibly created or endorsed by government, such as the fractional banking scam. The legal counterfeiting scam called monetary policy, the litigation racket, and so on. Well, that's actually jumped a wide range there, but fractional reserve banking. Well, that just creating notes and putting your gold in a vault is contrary to what Moses taught, contrary to what Christ taught. Christ talked about treasuries. Don't put your trust in treasuries where, you know, thieves and robbers can break in and moths can eat it up. I mean, he went into all that. Those are instructions, folks. If all the Christians who say they're Christians were really Christians and knew what it meant to follow Christ, if we define Christian as a follower of Christ, back when they created the Federal Reserve, they would go down to the bank and they would, you know, maybe somebody gave him a check. They said, my money's at the bank, here's a check, go to the bank and get it. He says, okay. So he goes to the bank to get it, and the bank tries to give him a Federal Reserve note. He says, no, I want lawful money. I don't want those notes. Don't give me those notes. I want lawful money. And you say, well, wait a minute, notes are lawful money. No, they're not lawful money. They used to say on them, redeemable in lawful money. You're not redeemable in yourself. You're redeemable in lawful money. Gold and silver is lawful money. Notes are not lawful money. And people should have said, I don't want those notes. Nobody forced them to take those notes. But people went and did it. Stock market started going up because all this money was pouring into the, and you could go and buy stock with a note. And somebody else wanted to buy stock with a note. And then now there's this big demand because there's all this money flowing into the economy. Big demand for stocks, and people were buying stocks for way more than the value of the company, but the stocks kept going up because more and more people were running down and getting into the stock market. That's not force. Nobody forced them to go down and do that. Meanwhile, they're printing more and more money. If people of America, and most of America was Christian at that time, or claimed to be Christian, let's put it that way. If they had said, we don't want no notes. We don't want no stinking notes. We want lawful money. Because Moses said, you should have just weights and measures in your pocket. Now, to be honest with you, a $20 gold piece is not really all that lawful. That's coined money. We won't go into why that, but trust me for now. It's irrelevant to what we're talking about, but You want just weights and measures. So if there's anything stamped on your coin, you only want, I shouldn't have said coin, on the thing you call money, you utter it as money. Now it's illegal for U.S. citizens to utter anything else as money. But you should just stamp the weight and the purity. Let the value be determined by the trade. You don't stamp a value on it. That's coining. It's just weights and measures, not just coins. Now, that being said, we won't go down that road, but the point is that the Federal Reserve wasn't forced on you. Social Security really wasn't forced on you. You didn't have to get a Social Security number. You didn't have to get Social Security numbers in order to work or to hire people, if you hired them in a certain way. But you don't understand the law, because everybody was so interested in believing the false religion that was creeping into your thinking that all you had to do is believe in Jesus, but you weren't doing any of the things that Jesus did. Well, I shouldn't say not any, because really, way back in the 20s, 80 to 90% of all anything that could be even counted remotely as welfare for the needy of your society was provided by people voluntarily. Most people didn't go to public school back in the turn of the century, 1900. Most people were privately educated or educated in private schools or educated at home. And most of the public schools that were available, even though they were in the minority, they were heavily funded by private donations of the people. They were not entirely government institutions. We changed what we were doing. Nobody forced us to do this. Now, there was pressure at times to create, you know, mandatory school attendance laws and all that kind of stuff, but you could have homeschooled. Every Christian, real Christians, would all homeschool. They would not use public education. Now, that was back when you had pretty good public education. You know, we've got books. You can go look on our website, pamphlets, articles, all free, that tell you the changes that were made in your school books that you could use. I noticed it on my own. I was homeschooling our kids for decades, and I had six children. And so I read so many school books. I read them from, you know, 1990, 1960s, 80s, 70s, back in the 50s, 40s. I read those school books. I looked at them. Some of my were such trash I didn't even look at. But I noticed that between about 1910 and about 1945, school books started making drastic changes in what they were teaching, what they were not teaching. I just noticed it. I didn't think it was a conspiracy or anything. I just noticed that, oh, they don't even talk about this here. They don't even talk. Best history book I have was written, actually, it was just about the turn of the century. It was 1492 to 1892. And I finally obtained a copy of it. It's a very thick book. I'm going to have my grandsons read it. And my granddaughter, when she's old enough, she can probably read it now. She's so good. But anyway, the point is that somebody began to mess around with the way in which children viewed history. Now you have kids that go to school and they don't even learn history. They don't have a clue who history. You know, I mean, political science majors shown pictures of presidents from Ronald Reagan to, you know, vice presidents like Biden and all the, shown big life-size pictures, not life-size, but pretty good-sized pictures of these men, and they can't identify them. You know, Kennedy, can't identify them. Don't know who they are. They're in college as political science majors. You can ask them questions like, who run the American Revolution? Who were we fighting? You know, they don't know them. I mean, there's a movie coming out I guess it's out already. And I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, and if there's a scene, you know, you'll probably see on YouTube or something, a scene where they're complaining, relatives are complaining that this guy is homeschooling his kids. And so he calls down their kids and his kid, one of his kids, and asks them some simple questions, and they haven't got a clue. His kid can just rattle on about it. Now, my kids weren't quite, you know, that's a movie. They're not quite like that, but, you know, they know way more about history than any of the kids that they end up running into in grade school, high school, even in college. They just study history. And we started, even when reading history books, we started realizing you can't just read a history book. You know, if you want to know about George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, you have to read the letters that they wrote, the things that they wrote, what they said was important, and what people wrote about them and to them. And that gives you a better perspective as to these guys. And they weren't all right. They weren't all saints by any means. But today, the average American, and now I see actually a poisonous history being published. People just did not know what was going on, and that's only 200 years ago. How come you don't know about Christ and what he was doing? He came preaching a government. These guys are saying there is no legitimate government. They think that all governments have to be filled with offices of power, where men who exercise power, or want power, desire office. Israel originally was a government where they did not exercise power. They did, the leaders did not have power. They could force no taxes. They could make no new laws, regulations, or anything. They had a whole book about law. But most of the people who read the Torah now, they do not understand it because they're reading metaphors and allegories, and they don't understand that. So we've written pamphlets, try to keep it short, pamphlets, articles, and some books that show you how that government works. Somebody on Facebook says, well, but how do you do this? How do you do that? Read the book. It's free online. But the idea that there is no authority, and I started talking about this a little bit in one of our last shows. And, you know, he's talking about here's one thing he says, the belief in government is essentially a religion. Well, that's true. It is. All governments are religious in nature because they all require a certain amount of faith. They call that faith usually allegiance, and you're usually bound to leaders who make laws for you. But that isn't all governments are not like that. The most predominant form of government throughout the history of mankind, and this is not just my opinion, there's quite a few books being written about this now. The most predominant form of government were voluntary systems. No taxes. Everybody paid in voluntarily. But how do you organize 10,000 people voluntarily? How do they know, even if, you know, there's nobody who can sit up there and say, we're all going to go to war. But if the enemy is attacking, you got to organize somehow. You can't just all just run out there and start shooting at them. You've got to add wisdom to it. So how do you do that? Is it involve all volunteer army? Do you even have any idea how that would work? Put 10,000 men in the field if you were invaded. Are you gonna elect leaders when you're invaded? You know, you don't want leaders now, but you're gonna elect leaders then, and then they're going to tell your troops where to go, and they're gonna say you guys run down here and all get killed. And no, how you don't even know. You're not learning in school. You didn't learn it growing up. How do you operate a voluntary government that does not take away your right to choose? What binds you together as a people? And, you know, we've given you the example that people think, you know, well, they put up these altars and they killed sheep, and then this invading army came through and conquered Sodom and Gomorrah and all kinds of other city states. But then they took Lot captive, so Abraham's going to go and try to free him. Well, he can only come up with a couple hundred men. How's he going to defeat this army? Well, he had all these other people around him where he had set up altars, and they all came with their soldiers. And their soldiers were all voluntary soldiers, and so you had this huge voluntary army. We don't know how many people it was altogether, but in one night they defeated these armies that had taken one city-state after another. How did they do that? Because they killed sheep together? No, they didn't kill sheep together. They didn't pile up dead stones and kill sheep and set them on fire. Again, those are allegories. They created a social welfare system that was entirely based on free will offerings, charity. This bound society together. They didn't need a golden calf to put all your money in a central bank, one purse. One purse runs towards death. That's what the Bible says. But that's what you guys have now. The authority in the kingdom of God is held by each individual person who voluntarily come together in a network of people who learn to care about one another as much as they care about themselves. You don't know how to do that. Even the people who congregate together in little congregations and they go through their little rituals and their little ideas about religion and everything, they're just an isolated little congregation. They're not a kingdom. What do you do when an invading army comes in? What do you do when there's a giant earthquake on the west coast that sends a tidal wave in and kills thousands of people, cuts off all the oil pipelines and gas lines and breaks most of the bridges, and now you got thousands and thousands of people dying? What do you do? How do you do it? Well, we'll talk about that when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom. We'll take a little break here and we'll be right back. Okay, so what I just quick review of when we first started talking about this earlier this morning, we went through a lot of words like government. Government doesn't necessarily mean rulers. Government is simply the way in which you govern yourself. You can govern yourself in lots of different ways, and you may give power to men to exercise authority one over the other. If you do, we know you're not a Christian, because Christ said you're not to be like the governments of the Gentiles who exercise authority one over the other, but he is to be greatest among you is to be servant. So he's talking about rank, and he's talking about government, and that you're supposed to be that government, and you're supposed to have authority to be that government, but that government, the authority, is over yourself. It's not over your neighbor. It's not over your neighbor's stuff. But it's a government. So these guys are throwing around words that they haven't even really looked up, because they think they already know. Big mistake. Now, do I already know? Well, I back it up. I show you. You know, we have a page on shows you the common definitions of government. In that statement I read just before the break, the belief in government is essentially a religion, goes on to say the most dangerous and destructive religion ever is the belief in government, is what he's saying. Religion is what? And we've gone over this. There's different definitions of religion throughout the ages. There's two basic ones floating around. One is religion is what you think about God, your opinion of a supreme being. You know, you might have a Muslim opinion or a Christian opinion, but that's not really religion. Religion comes, you know, it comes from a number of different words, but in the original Greek, it's thresky, and thresky isn't what you think, it's what you do. Religion defined just 200 years ago, at the time of the United States Constitution, when they used the word religion in the United States Constitution, or any of those documents, if they went to look up that word, they would look it up in Bouvier's. And Bouvier says religion is the pious performance of your duty to God and your fellow man. Your duty to your fellow man is to love your neighbor as yourself. That's your duty. Now, how you love him, that's between you and God. Loving God, well, it's loving the giver of life and the creator and everything that he's given you. You don't dress and keep it, that kind of thing. Most Christians don't qualify for that because they've actually gone to the government and asked the government to take stuff away from my neighbor, especially my rich neighbors, so that I can have more. That's anti-Christ. That's the religion of force, not the religion of charity and love. That's what you do is covet your neighbor's goods. You can say, well, I only covet rich people's goods. I don't covet the poor people's goods. But you covet. It doesn't say, thou shalt not covet unless he's really rich. People say taxation is theft. No, taxation is the result of covetousness. So people say, well, when did I give permission to them to tax me? You know, that was one of the things in the American Revolution that we hardly ever read, but if you go read the Declaration of Independence, they aren't complaining about taxation without representation. Isn't that the phrase you always hear, taxation without? It doesn't say that in there. Didn't you know it doesn't say that? It says taxation without consent. Well, how do you give consent? Well, if it's okay for you to force your neighbor to pay for your public school, for the care of your parents when they're old, if it's okay for you to force the government or your neighbor to pay that through government, then it's okay that the government and your neighbor forces you to pay for their health care. See, as you judge, so shall ye be judged. So when he goes on in his next statement, hundreds of millions of human beings have been murdered and robbed by their own governments. No, they've been murdered and robbed by their own neighbors. By their fellow man. Who just used government to do it. I mean, to say that it's government's fault that this is happening is like blaming the gun for shooting somebody. You guys pulled the trigger. You just don't want to look at that. You want to blame everything on government. Like some kind of scapegoat. The government is a product of the spirit that dwelleth in you. That's what government is. You want to change that, change the spirit that dwelleth in you. Take a look at yourself. It goes on to say, many millions more have died in government-created wars. Well, that's true. But who created government? Now, so he wants to uncreate government. Now, he was born a slave to parents who were slaves, who became slaves because maybe their parents were slaves. And I say slaves, what do I mean by slave? A slave is someone who can work a percentage of the day, and he doesn't keep the fruits of that work. Now, he may be a voluntary servitude, but he says, I will work half the day for you, you don't have to pay me anything, but I get to sleep and eat at your table. And if I get sick, you'll take care of me. If the funds are available. So, anyway, that's what you've sat and ate with rulers with great appetite. And now we got all these guys saying, oh, they don't have any authority. They can't tell me what to do. You ate at their table. Your parents ate at their table. Many of you are still eating at their table. And you think that you can just make that all go away. You can't. And you think, well, I don't take any of those benefits. I don't send my kids to public school. I don't. Well, let's take a look at all of them. Who takes care of your parents? Some guys say, well, my parents take care of themselves. Well, you're not taking care of them, right? You're not honoring your father and your mother. You figure they can take care of yourself. You're just going to go off and be free. Well, that's contrary to the Bible. You should be taking care of your parents. I mean, even if they can take care of themselves, a portion of everything you make should go to your parents to strengthen them, to fatten them. That's what it means to honor. Same word for honor is the same word for fatten or make heavy, to strengthen. You see, the reason you have to pay taxes to the government is the government's been doing the job of your natural father. And we go through that. Jesus said, call no man on earth father, but my father in heaven. He talks about the fathers of the earth. Who's he talking about? Back then, everybody knew. Your pastor's not going to tell you. I'm going to tell you. That all the sinners in Rome were called father. They were called conscripted fathers. Conscripte patres. The emperor was called patronus. Our father. That's what that means. And you prayed to them for benefits. Romans did. Many of the Judeans did. Citizens of Judea did. But Christians did not. And through that process, not only did they not pray to them for benefits, they became benefactors of charity. Daily ministration. You see it right away. They're doing this. And of course, you saw Jesus doing it with the loaves and fishes. You think he just made those out of thin air. Maybe. But if you actually read the text, it doesn't really sound like that. If you actually understand the text, it definitely doesn't sound like that. If you understand the context of the text, no, doesn't sound like that. It sounds like they were hungry, the apostles were hungry, they needed to go get food because food was short, and it shouldn't be short for the ministers at Feast of Tabernacles, which is evidently what they were at, very clear. He told them to go and organize themselves into groups of 50. Well, they all knew what that meant. Moses did it, tens, fifties, hundreds, and thousands. And then he asked if somebody had anything to eat. One boy comes forward and has a bunch of bread and fish, way more than Jesus could eat. And he gave it to Jesus as if to feed Jesus and the apostles, because they were the ones that needed food. They were going to go buy food for all these people. And guess what? Jesus broke it and told them to give it away. And that's what they did. And then the people loosened up their charity muscles a little bit, and everybody who had food began to share. They began to care. We talked about that. Care. If you go to Preparing You, you can actually look up a page that talks about care. At the Bohemian Grove, they have a big play every year where they kill care, cremate care, because they don't want you to care. That's why they create socialism. Nimrod did it, Cain did it, the king of Sodom did it. They want a socialist state because then you don't care about one another. Much easier to rule over and regulate and manipulate and boss around people who don't care about each other. Very much easier if you kill care. But if Christ brings care back to life by his own sacrifice, people say, look what he sacrificed for us. Now we need to sacrifice for one another if Christ is in us. Now, that is scary. Governments of the world are afraid that you might start caring. You might start coming together with the character of Christ. They want to keep you divided. They want to keep you thinking, well, I got my little congregation. I got my little, you know, hideout in the hills. I got my little... No. Not going to work. Not in the days coming. The idea that we need to give a group of people permission to forcibly rob and control us, I'm reading here, so they can protect us from those who might forcibly rob and control us is ridiculous. Absolutely true. And yet most people believe that we need government. We do need government. We just don't need governments of force. What did John the Baptist say? Take nothing by force. If your neighbor has a need, if he's hungry, if he has no coat, he needs shelter, you share. And you do that with your neighbor. Now, what's your neighbor? Your neighbor, they're very clear that if people are backbiters and slothful and lazy and selfish, don't give them. They don't work, they don't eat. If they can't work, but they're really good people, then you get to help them out. Whose job is it to decide that? Yours. Now, you need to put people in charge of that, but you don't want some massive organization doing it. You want to have everything grassroots. So you get together with 9 people, 10 people, and pick a minister. And then his job is to connect you. This is his job, not to sit there and ramble on for hours about what he knows in Bible school. I mean, if he can do that, great. But his job is to connect you with 9 other congregations like yourself in case you have a problem too big for you to handle. But it's all voluntary. It changes the nature of society, and it changes the way you look at things. You know, I was just listening to people at the Bundy Ranch who were talking about this Gold Butte land grab, as they call it. You know, and again, your surety for debt, all that land that's going, that 1.3 to 6 million acres, plus the millions of acres already in control and custody of the government, is all collateral for debt. Your labor is collateral for debt. Your children are collateral for debt. And they're just sectioning off that collateral, securing it for the people that own it, which isn't you anymore. You're owned. You don't own. You are owned. And this has come about because you guys have sat and ate with rulers with great appetite. And because of your covetous practices, you have been made merchandise and become surety for debt. But there's a way out. But not a way out without sacrifice, without caring, without giving life, without gathering together and caring. But anyway, the guys were saying there, they were talking about just another open invitation to people to come out, you know, and exercise your Second Amendment right. They're just letting anybody come out. That's not the way you do it. That's not the way you organize. You will not be able to depend upon those people. The early Christians formed a viable republic at the heart of the Roman Empire, a republic where the leaders were titular and exercised no authority one over the other, but provided services and needs during a very trying time because there were shortages of food and collapse of the economy. The cost of that sack of wheat, 30-pound sack of wheat, went from 6 dimes, 6 denarii, to 120,000 denarii. It did this in a little over a generation and a half. When I was a kid, a loaf of bread was a dime. It's considerably more now. By the time, you know, in another 10 years maybe, I mean, it could happen overnight. It doesn't have to be 10 years. Maybe it's only a couple years. This, you know, a sack of grain that costs you, you know, what, $20 now could end up costing you $2,000. You used to be able to buy it for 20 dimes. Now it may cost you, you know, thousands of dollars. Who knows how, there's no end to it. I mean, 120,000 denarii for what 6 denarii used to buy? Why? Because there was no silver in the denarii. Clay. They were fiat. That's it. This is always going. So what was the solution? The solution is Christ. To do what Christ said. So anyway, that was much from an article by Larkin Rose, but there's another guy who wrote an article that's similar, Ryan Christian, and I thought it was interesting because the name was Christian, but he says the myth of authority, and he goes, and we can share these links with you, but you could Google them and probably find them. He says, what exactly is authority? According to the Merriam Dictionary, the definition is power to influence or command thought, opinion, or behavior. Well, you've just given a choice there. Power to influence or command. Influence, I can tell you information that you did not know, and that is influence. I can tell you that, you know, this is what the Levites were. They were this network of ministers, tens, fifties, hundreds of thousands, all linked together, so that if there was an enemy coming in on the north, they told these ministers, and they did the Paul Revere ride kind of thing, and said, the Philistines are coming, the Philistines are coming, and everybody turned out. And they turned out very orderly and organized because they had a very orderly and organized system to guarantee their social welfare. And it wasn't guaranteed, but it was guaranteed that somebody could be there for you if you really needed help. But what happens is there's a self-governing influence there because the people, you begin to feel guilty if your buddies help you out all the time. I don't want to be a burden to my buddies. You become a band of brothers. You got to work at that. You can't just read a book about it. All our books are free. You can't just read a book. You got to actually do it. And that's why I tell people, join the network. Form congregations. Yeah, you're going to find some jerks. You know, we have no jerk filter on our email groups. And tell you the truth, almost everybody gets to be a jerk at least once or twice in their life. So figure on it that everybody isn't going to have it all together. You know, I had one guy looking around for the right congregation. He wanted a congregation of really, you know, like great guys and everything. And I says, you know, have you ever find this congregation of saints that you're looking for? Why do you think they're going to let you in? And he immediately joined the congregation because he realized, I'm no saint. Why should I only settle for other saints? And that's what you come together. There's no guarantee your kids are going to turn out. You come together. You don't have to do anything for these people. You don't have to necessarily hug them all the time or anything. But you have to start caring about somebody. And then let the nature of the network filter out those who will continue to care. And those who will create some sort of dogmatic rule everybody's got to follow and you don't want to follow. And so they're going to up and leave. Happens all the time. People are going to up and leave because you're not doing it the way I think it ought to be done. Well, then you go off and be by yourself or go find, you start looking, seeking the kingdom, seeking those people who are seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And yeah, we're spread out, but that's good because now all we have to do is fill in the blanks. And there is authority, and the authority was given to each individual person, dominion. And if you want to keep it there, you have to care about your neighbor's authority in his life, in his family. And that's, each family is that altar of clay. And then you have to put together an altar of stones, living stones, council of men, not to rule over you, tell you what to do, but to serve you, to connect you with other congregations so that those congregations can come together and help you if there's a famine, if there's a fire, if there's an earthquake, if there's an invasion, if say some local bureaucrat from the other government wants to bully you, wouldn't it be great if 100 people showed up and said, oh, well, what's going on here? You know, I could give you hundreds of examples of that. Where, you know, somebody, Children's Services comes by, somebody makes a complaint. You wouldn't believe people who do really good with their kids, but they homeschool, have had their own family members, distant family members, turn them in as some kind, you know, that's a little bit what that movie was about, because they think, oh, you're doing a terrible service to these kids because you're trying to teach them at home. you know, go look at my kids. They were taught at home. It's not bad. Chances are your kids will be smarter, even if you're an unschooler. Which, I don't believe in unschooling. I think that's a mistake. It says in the Bible, train up your children. You should be schooling your children. Well, you don't want to be like a school of fish, but you want them to learn. So you know, we didn't press a lot, but that every day they'd get some sort of an assignment. They could get it done by 10 o'clock. They could get it done by noon. It might take them till 3, but they weren't going out to do other stuff until they got that done. Because we had authority. But it taught them all to be self-disciplined, self-starters, learn how to, you know, organize their time and get things done. They realized, if I don't do it, it ain't going to get done. They all had chores. It's maturing. You don't need to wait to seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness. Matter of fact, you need to seek it now and start practicing. Because life is going to get even more difficult than it is now. So anyway, this Christian, he goes on and writes a number of things here. And one of the things he says, does the use of authority provide those which is enacted on a benefit? Does the use of authority, well, if he's talking about, again, government, because he thinks all governments are governments of authority, you know, centralized authority. But the government I've been talking about is not centralized authority, but has all kinds of authority. You have authority over you. I have authority over me. We all have authority over each other. And we come together and we use the authority over ourselves to benefit our neighbor. So yes, it does. In the kingdom of God, in the kingdom of the world, it may not, because power corrupts. And if you centralize power, you corrupt your leaders. But if you have leaders who do not exercise power, but exercise charity and service and care, you're going to have a different kind of government. But in order to have that government, you have to care. You have to show up. You have to exercise your right to choose over you to be there for your neighbor. You have to love your neighbor as yourself. And that's the way it works. And if you want to know more about it, join us on the network. Go to preparingyou.com. Go to hisholychurch.org. Either one. Click on the network links. Join the network. Start forming congregations. Start helping one another. It's not real hard now because there's not a lot to do. But there's a lot to learn. And until then, may peace be upon your house and may God be with you. God bless still. We see you next week.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.